I'm finally looking in the mirror and seeing that me I love. I'm getting back to the girl I was.
Ag Talk, Your Story Matters, is America's platform for women in agriculture to share their thoughts, ideas, and stories. This is a safe space for everyone in agriculture, no matter what their role is, to come together and have real and raw conversations. We feature our Ag Women Connect members, guest speakers, and current topics across the nation that affect our agriculture industry. Our goal is to include others into our discussions, and we invite you to be a part of our conversation every week. Join us. Let's talk about fear-based marketing. This has been a hot topic here in the agriculture industry, and I thought, you know what? Let's just hash this out and put together a professional panel to discuss all of this. I'm really excited to dive into it today, but first, I want to recognize everybody who is going to be on the panel, putting in their efforts and their opinions on this matter. First off, we have Stephanie Nash, a good friend of mine, who is a fourth-generation dairy farmer, moved from California to the great state of Tennessee. You know as well as I do that she is a hard hitter when it comes to the dairy industry. We have Ms. Sarah Fallon Tate from Wyoming, who has Wild West Advocacy. She's got her degree in law, and she is a true advocate for speaking and seeking the truth in agriculture. We also have Miss Audrey Cunningham. She lives in South Texas. She is an Ag Women Connect ambassador, and she also ropes. She does tie-down roping and is absolutely incredible, and she works for Tartar Equipment. And then Karen Glick from Oklahoma, she is with Ag Professionals. She has been delving into this research and ag advocacy for, I believe, over 30 years. She's got a wealth of knowledge. So I just want to say welcome, ladies and listeners. We are in for a treat today. So first off, I think we need to discuss what is fear-based marketing. We've actually had some of those questions come through our social media, and I thought that I would address that before we get started. Fear-based marketing is a marketing strategy that aims to influence audience psychology by creating a sense of fear or anxiety in order to prompt a desired action or behavior. Some of the fear-based marketing can take many forms, such as using scare tactics, usually with mis or disinformation, to highlight the consequences of not taking action, creating a sense of urgency by emphasizing limited time offers to scarcity, focusing on the negative consequences of not using a product or service, using fear-inducing language or imagery to grab attention, and creating a sense of FOMO, fear of missing out, by emphasizing the benefits of acting quickly. Some of the negative consequences are alienating or repelling potential customers who feel manipulated or intimidated, creating a negative perception of the brand or product. That's something we're going to discuss today. Fostering a sense of anxiety or stress in the target audience and being perceived as dishonest or manipulative. So, Karen, we're going to start off with you because you do such a great job of talking about division in agriculture. I'm going to let you take over and speak to that for a bit.
Well, I think that agriculture itself has been manipulated in some ways, and we see that we're falling into these different categories, and we're following these larger companies when it comes to promoting the types of products that we're producing, whether it's beef, whether we're producing corn or cotton or anything like that. And we all need to stick together. When we divide ourselves, then we end up not providing a unified front in front of the organizations that are really vying to put us out of business. And I think that's something that people really need to sort of understand from the very get-go, is that there are forces at work that are looking to end animal agriculture. They're looking to move the growing of crops to other countries, to Africa. They've got their eyes on Africa. And this is all falling into the idea that we're going to be equalizing economies, like from a global perspective. So what's happening there is that we've got some of these companies that are using big, fancy, slick marketing firms that are, they're just looking to the easiest way to sell their product, right? And an easy, the easy way to do that is to try to convince people that the products that are similar but produced differently aren't as good, right, as what we have. And so that creates divide within our industry. And it also, like you mentioned, creates suspicion. People then don't, you know, don't trust the food that they're getting and the food that they're feeding their families. So then it's much harder to, when we need support to push back against these other groups that are helping to fuel this, it makes it so much harder for us as an industry to stand up and protect ourselves. We're not doing ourselves any good. Let's say, for example, the beef industry. We're not doing ourselves any good if we're, you know, criticizing a different way of production. There is room and a need for every type of production. And we do see this a lot with the smaller groups. They're pushing against bigger producers. And so we just have this, end up with this culture of infighting, and people are too busy, you know, doing that as opposed to paying attention to these outer forces that are pushing on us. And I think too, you know, what happens with the whole issue of disinformation is that then this disinformation or misinformation is going out into the public and they don't have the discernment, right? They don't have the background or the understanding really to be able to look through some of this stuff and understand it. And that's where you end up with the distrust. But I kind of go back to, you look at some of these marketing analysis of, you know, different, for example, different professions and the people that are trusted. Well, farmers and ranchers, for the most part, by the public, are still trusted and valued by the public. So we need to remember that and support that feeling. And when we're kind of going after each other, and saying that our product is better and not only is theirs inferior, but whatever the issue is that they decide to use to market their own stuff. So we don't want to be undermining that, right? We need that help and support because we just have so much more other things going, other pressures going on. So I think that's the kind of the basics of it.
Yeah. I feel like you said it with their slick marketing. They take advantage of people not knowing our industry, and it's completely manipulated. Sarah, can you give some examples, or what are your thoughts of what you've seen with fear-based marketing in the ag industry?
I see it kind of from all different directions. So we see it within the agriculture industry itself, but this has been happening for a really long time from forces outside of the agriculture industry. So, for example, the environmentalist groups, the radical environmentalist groups have always talked about how our food is being poisoned or a certain practice is hurting our animals or something like that. And I think that Karen said it perfectly. We need all of the ways of producing food to be able to survive. An example that I've seen recently is regenerative agriculture versus traditional agriculture. And I've been told, and for those of you who are not familiar with me, I'm a sixth generation ranch kid in Wyoming. And I was told by a regenerative agriculture producer that if you have to feed hay, then you shouldn't be ranching because that means that you are not, you're either in a place where ranching is not sustainable or you're treating your land improperly. And I look at that and say, we have snow for 9 months of the year. We have to feed hay. It doesn't have to do with our grazing practices. We have to feed hay because we have snow 9 months of the year. And if you take out from the ranching industry all of the places in the West that rely on hay because of our long winter season, all you're doing is taking a bunch of land out of production that really can't be used for anything else. Like, we can't grow a single thing here except for cattle. And so I think that agriculture should be focused on building each other up and fighting more of those outside forces than we should be focused on fighting each other. Because at the end of the day, if one form of agriculture sinks, the rest of us are going to sink too.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I get feedback through my emails of people listening to rural radio, and people have to understand, like, I literally hear so many opinions and so many angles on every subject. A lot of it has been the grass-fed versus the grain-fed, and then organic versus non-organic, and then big ag versus small ag. There's so many examples of it.
I will say that for me, just as a, not only a consumer, like, I know my background is way more equine rodeo, but like, to have my roping calves, that is something that, you know, I am in the cattle industry. Now, whether or not they came from a dairy or if they came off of somebody's beef production or at the sale barn, I'm going to have to care for them for what my environment is. So in my position as a salesman for farm and ranch equipment, my job is to fit a consumer a product that will maximize efficiency and be effective for them at their facility. And everybody is very unique. So no land is the same. No setup is the same in their facility. And so strategizing a sales pitch for one size fits all is such a failure to the consumer. Because, like, even in Texas, so like for my job right now, I cover Texas. There is 7 geographical regions, according to the Texas wildlife. You're not going to feed your cattle the same or have the same type of fencing that's going to sustain down on the coast, where the salt likes to rust out a lot of things. You got to have galvanized. You're going to have wood posts. But then up in North Texas, you can have a great set of, you know, powder coat pens set up. So I do think a lot of the marketing strategies is almost like they're trying to think of this as a one size fits all, not, hey, for your type of, you know, farming, ranching, homesteading, your setup, this is what could fit.
Yeah. And the one size fits all, I mean, that is really coming from animal extremist groups and environmental groups, right? They are banking on and making big money off of these sound bites, right? And then too, when they're pushing their regulations, whether it's through policy, rulemaking, legislation itself, ordinances, and things like that, that's the approach that they're taking. When we're busy tearing down other producers and are saying, hey, that's not how you should be doing it. I don't do it that way. My family's been ranching for so many years, things like that. Then again, it sort of kind of falls into the same thing, into that one size fits all, into that issue with the sound bite. One thing I would like to see producers do is, number one, stop that and stop it in its tracks. We're not going to be able to stop the big companies or like the non-GMO project. I mean, they're making bucks off their butterflies, right? They have the non-GMO logo on stuff where there's no GMO product, you know, for that, you know. For example, labeling water, right? Or labeling salt. You see that label on those kinds of products as well. I don't know that we're going to be able to stop that kind of activity from going on because there's so much money involved in it. But what we can do is, if we're unified, is to have a much larger voice and not fall into those same sort of traps. And that's where the beef producer myself, I get very disappointed in seeing some of the marketing, the farm-to-table marketing that's going on. The same farm-to-table stuff that you can come and buy it at the store, you know, on our ranch or our store in town is the same stuff that you can also buy, you know, in the grocery store, like in your region. And we need to see more of that. I think we need to stand up for each other and not participate. I, for one, am not afraid at all. If I run across something like that online, I call people out. And I do the same thing within the horse industry, because the horse industry is doing some of the same kinds of things. You know, where you're just, exposing yourself or ourselves or in our industry to scrutiny. That's something else too that I think people need to understand is that we have these groups, environmental and animal rights groups, that have moles, trolls everywhere. I mean, they've got thousands of people that are working, you know, the animal rights group is like 2%, right, of our population. Well, it's still a lot of people, if you think about it, right? And they've got these people radicalized, right? So they're very energized and they're out in these social groups and they're stirring up dissent and, you know, they have fake accounts and they're watching and waiting for us to throw each other under the bus. And then they use that against us, right? They'll say, well, producers are, and even horse people are saying this. I just can't say it enough that, you know, we need to stick together. And I encourage everyone, if you're on one of these social platforms in a group and you see some of this stuff happening, speak up. Because eventually, if enough of us speak up and, you know, set the record straight, then they won't, you know, they won't have this tool to use against us. And we need to address, too, you know, some of the other misinformation. We need to do it as a group, right? So I'd love to see some concentrated campaigns with some of these different support groups where we can all get together at the same time and say, okay, we're going to be focusing on providing positive information about a certain thing. And then it hits Google and the airwaves in, you know, in a very much more of a unified message. If there's more messaging coming from more sources, but it's all the same kind of messaging, then our voice gets amplified. And that's exactly what these environmental and animal extremist groups are doing. If you see something that they're hitting on, all of a sudden you're seeing the HSUS push out something and or the Center for Biological Diversity or the ASPCA. And so we need to poke holes in their one size fits all ideology.
Absolutely. Those are some great points. Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break, but we are just getting started. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back from the break. Sarah has some information about what the CEOs are making off of all of this. Sarah, take it away.
Yeah, so Karen was just talking about how the radical environmentalists are making bucks off of butterflies. And I actually just found these numbers the other day. Some of the very worst radical environmentalist groups, they really are making tons and tons of money off of this mis and disinformation. And so according to the 990 tax filings from the year 2021, the Fred Krupp, the president of the Environmental Defense Fund, made $922,000 in 1 year. And that's just the CEO, okay? The president and CEO of the World Wildlife Fund, Carter Roberts, made $1,204,775. That was in 2022. Jennifer Morris, the CEO of the Nature Conservancy, in 2020, made $732,138. And then last year made $758,000. And I have a whole list, you know, that Kieran Suckling from the Center for Biological Diversity made like $300,000+ just in 2021 to 2022. And this is so appalling to me because these groups are having consumers donate to them with the thoughts that they are saving our environment, that they are helping agriculture. And really, it's a whole bunch of mis and disinformation when they talk about that we are destroying the environment. They like to say that we are hurting our animals. And so I think it is so important that agriculture become unified because really, these people are the enemy. They are literally making money off of lying to the consumers. And to consumers, honestly, any consumers listening to this, if you want to donate to an organization, you should look up their 990 tax filings because that is public information for nonprofit organizations and see what they're spending their money on because these groups are not spending money to help the environment. They are pocketing the money. And so not only are you paying to be misinformed, you are paying to have rich people put more money in their pockets. And that does not help the environment and it does not help agriculture. So agriculture really needs to be unified and quit fighting each other. And these are the people that we should be fighting.
Great research. Thank you. Okay, we've got Stephanie Nash on the line. She just got done speaking at a big conference about our food labeling system. Stephanie, tell us a little bit about what you spoke about this weekend and how people reacted to it.
Yeah, so it was at World Outreach Church, which is the largest church in Tennessee. It's also home of Pastor Allen. He has become a spokesperson against the government and a lot of issues that are facing our country with education of our kids and college students across our country with certain ideas. And so I only had about 20 minutes, but I really wanted to, you know, touch the surface with a lot of the Clean Energy Act. I don't believe people really know how deep it gets. You know, from 2021, it used to be $1.5 billion they were spending on clean energy infrastructure. And it's gone up to $5.8 billion within the last 3 years with the Green New Energy Deal. And so a couple of things that I said, you know, about agriculture, to me, sustainability is, you know, taking the manure and spreading on the fields for my crops, giving it the nutrients that it needs. For me, being sustainable is making sure my cows are getting fed the nutrients and using byproducts up to 85% that our cows can digest of things that we can't digest instead of a lithium battery from an electric car that we buy from China going back to the landfill. And so I was trying to give them ideas, this clean new energy that they are pushing on Americans and across the world and how it actually affects the environment. I think it's hilarious that we go into a lot of these arguments that clean energy is our future, that solar panels need to be everywhere and taking up land and water resources, which is absolutely devastating, not only to that land and what it is capable of growing, but the future of our country. And we were talking earlier, I think it's funny as well, they want progress and they want to build houses, but I don't know anybody my age coming in and buying a $500,000 home. And so we have to remember that the agenda and the propagandas that the government is pushing against the agriculture industry is strong, and it is for the clean new energy deal in our country. Another thing we talked about was the labeling system of how I truly believe it's broken. I have been canceled. I have been taken off of places that I was going to go to speak because I use the word broken, and it is. I have been in the dairy industry my entire life. We were number one for alternative products coming out against our industry. You guys have been facing it in the beef industry and the pork industry for the past probably like 5 years. Alternative milk has been on the market for a long time. We were the first ones, you know, really to tackle activists coming after us saying that milk causes cancer, that there's blood in milk, that if you're not buying organic, then you're a bad person for the planet. And I was sick and tired of hearing it because I know how my production is. I know how my cows are run. I know where my milk goes. But unfortunately, because of the millions of dollars through the activists and our government pushing this clean, new, sustainability, climate change friendly, people have forgotten where our food comes from. And so at the end of the day, I think the labeling system is broken. I told a story on stage. I said the carrots used to be purple and white. And because of nature and how our world has changed, now they're orange. That's not being, we're not pumping anything into the food to make it that way. But people get on the fact that I heard Karen say this earlier about the non-GMO GMO. You should be more scared about GMO engineering, of what they're adding into your food, about the plant-based, about the fake meat coming into our country. Like, that's the word, in my opinion, that we should be looking at, not just how nature has changed and our climate has changed and how people and farmers farm nowadays. I mean, we've had to change. I mean, our world has changed, and that's not a bad thing. And so when it comes to labeling, I'm very passionate about telling people truthfully, because our whole world of what agriculture is has changed to consumers. People are afraid of their food. They think if they don't buy natural, organic, or non-GMO that they're going to die or they're going to get sick. And it's just become so extreme. It's scaring the heck out of people. It's scaring the consumer so bad. And I had people run up to me after I spoke. So they're like, so if it has this labeling, it doesn't mean this, or I shouldn't be spending 5 minutes looking at one product to see if this other product has the label. I said, no. Because we all farm differently. We all have different environments and weathers and regulations that we have to deal with. And so asking everybody to be organic, we wouldn't sustain the American people or the population. Asking everybody to be grass-fed in Montana or Wyoming is asking them to pretty much kill their cattle off because they have no grass. And so we have to understand the different resources and availability we have to us and what's behind that label, what's behind that product. Because in my opinion, I'll buy it because I know the producer, or I'll buy it because I actually know the truth. But unfortunately, the consumers don't. And our government activists have made billions of dollars putting fear into the life of consumers to make sure agriculture fails. And so we need to make sure that we're strong in agriculture. I mean, I see it all the time and I've talked about it. These big conservative corporations, they're no better than the activists down the street. And I've been very vocal about this the past 2 months is, if you come in as a first generation farmer and you think you do a better job than me and you're advocating fear into consumer to buy your product, shame on you. I'm not going to agree with it because I believe every farmer rancher is essential and we all give back to the food supply. And at the end of the day, that's what matters, that we are all farmers and ranchers, that we are all united, and that we all feed the American people.
Amen, girl. So this got me to thinking, like, I'm a 1980s baby. Back then it was cool to drink milk. You think about like all of the famous people, they had a carton of milk in their hand and it was really cool to eat beef. And it just makes you think like, what has changed between those years and now? Is it the people that are representing agriculture on Capitol Hill, their agenda, their ideology?
Coming from California, as most of you guys know, like, we fought every day, like, for regulations or air quality or whatever it might be, for a little fish that they wanted to save instead of giving water to farmers or ranchers, right? And I really do believe it starts at the educational level. And thank goodness for Sarah being in college, because I think college students are the ones being attacked. I went through it being at Fresno State. The activists would come on with PETA and Humane Society. They would show videos that they would gain emotion. And it's crazy to me. And I said this on stage, you know, what's popular now is becoming a vegan and vegetarian. It's popular. It's not even about the scientific data or the safety qualities that you might take on because you are vegan and vegetarian. It's all about being popular and what's the norm and what's in and what's out. And at the end of the day, I'm going to nourish my body correctly. The movement has become so strong to hate agriculture that we haven't made progress. I love when I sit in a room and people are like, we have the same number of cows. And I said, yeah, but we've lost the quality of education. We've lost the truth of what farmers and ranchers do. If we can continue to go against each other, what good is it for our industry? And so I really do believe that they're getting into colleges. They're creating this vegan, vegetarian agriculture is bad. And then people, the next generation is leaving, not wanting to support us. And that's more dangerous, in my opinion, than any label, government, or activists out there, because we need the next generation to continue farming, or the propaganda for fake meat will be stronger. And so we have to watch what teachers and our cell phones and activists are teaching our kids, because that's crucial to our future.
Yeah, they're finding a way to infiltrate our youth.
It's so interesting teaching. I teach at the University of Wyoming. I teach agriculture law there. And it's interesting to me that my students are actually pretty overwhelmingly conservative. And since it's the ag college, most of my students want to go back into production agriculture. But I have been told, and this is, I'm only in my second semester teaching, but I've been told by so many students, so many, that I am the only professor that allows them to actually voice what they think. And I force my students to actually argue both the things that they agree with, and I also make them argue the opposing view. Because I think that until you have all of the views, we're not going to solve any problems. I am not arrogant enough to believe that I have the solution to everything. And I think it is so important to make people come up with their own ideas and think critically. And I think that is part of what we've lost in society. And I try really hard to instill that in my students. A second ago, you asked about, is it a lack of representation in Congress? When it comes to representing agriculture. And I think that's a problem too. While I think most agriculturalists are fairly conservative, even when I go back to Capitol Hill several times a year, and when I talk to some of our representatives who absolutely want to help agriculture, the problem is that they are so inexperienced with agriculture that they have these laws and these ideas for regulations or whatever, that they think this is going to be wonderful for agriculture. And it takes somebody who's actually producing in agriculture to be able to say, you know, that sounds great, but it's not going to work practically. And so I think we need to have more agriculture producers making the sacrifice, and I do believe it is a sacrifice, to go back to DC and represent our actual industries, because it's so hard to understand practically what we do without having experienced it yourself. And so we need to be educating our youth, but we also need to be educating and getting involved in the legal policy regulations, all of those areas back in DC, because we are sorely underrepresented.
Yeah, I talk about it too in Tennessee, like coming from California. You know, I feel like we had one of the strongest Farm Bureau in the country, and coming here, it's just in between. Nobody wants to hurt anybody's feelings, and policies that they adopt or want to back might not make sense to the entire part of agriculture. It's just Tennessee has really have been known for going for consumer opinion rather than farmer rancher and what's best for our economy here in Tennessee. And that's something too that I think could be very detrimental to our country, is if we don't listen to our farmers and ranchers and what they need over consumers, like where does that take us in the next 10 years?
I can tell you where it puts us. It puts us where we're not producing our own food anymore, right? And and I think people need to really understand that when they're buying into fear-based marketing and participating with that, and they're basically they're contributing to the destruction of agriculture as a whole. And I think if we understand that that's where the foundation is, and we can help other people understand that that's where the foundation is, then we might be able to energize people who have been wishy-washy and afraid to make some movement, right?
Yeah, it's very dark and nefarious to kind of dig through what the big agenda is behind all of this, but that really is a great point, Karen, and there's not a lot of people talking about that. So, you know, I hope to bring that to the Ag Women Connect conference this September and just do it in a way that does educate people. All right, guys, we will be right back again. We've got lots more to talk about. Stay tuned. We are back from the break, and Audrey has some great advice on how we can voice our stories and make a stance. Audrey, I saw your wheels turning. Is there something you want to talk about?
Well, I was kind of thinking, you know, what would like the practical applications about what we could actually do in support of this? So even though if it's liking, sharing, commenting people on the people that you see that are doing positive things of sharing it, because nobody goes viral overnight. They've pumped the pet and the rodeo stuff and farming. And even like, I just came back from visiting family in Alabama, and they have like little food trucks when I'm driving across Louisiana. You can go buy your crawfish and produce, and they got meat freezers at feed stores now. So I think the push might be, hey, can we not just go back and smell? Like that would be the efforts that I think that would be nice to see people partake in.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel though too, like when we put this information, when we put this information out, it's not the sexiest thing to talk about. People do buy into the fear mongering, and sometimes that's obviously what creates results. But I just want to say to people who are out there advocating, like, we know that it's not easy, but just keep doing it, because we can make a difference when we unite together, and we definitely need more of it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think just being an encouragement to others instead of just being it is very, very easy to sit and criticize and judge what's going on. But I do think there needs to be a little bit of a word of encouragement. And also, like, Ag Women Connect, right? Like, this is becoming a resource. This is becoming a foundation of where people can come in and come together and unite and talk about real active problems. But also leveraging the ladies that are in this group to find a solution. So I just love that about what we can accomplish.
Right. I love saying, don't be so focused on being an influencer. If you'll just be an encourager, the rest of that will come.
Audrey, when you were talking about advocating, I wear an advocate hat all the time. I talk to all the different people, and especially if I'm, you know, with work or if I'm out in the world and, you know, interacting with someone who I know doesn't have the same kind of background that I do, I may spark up a conversation just to see where they're at and what they understand. And, you know, I was talking to a guy that's wants to redo one of the websites that, you know, for the company I'm working for, and he's in Florida. And, you know, he was very supportive of agriculture. And then he was telling me about GMO and this and that. And so I just thought, hey, I'm going to spend some of this time, even though I want to find out about the service that he offers, but I'm going to set the record straight. And I asked him a question, how many GE crops are there, right? His first answer was 40,000. And he was just shocked to learn that there were 11, right? And so my conversation with him was to encourage him, and I gave him some ideas of where he could go to learn and get some more information. And a lot of people think that they're doing a great job of researching, like, oh, I've done the research. Well, again, these same groups that we're talking about with their, you know, million-dollar CEOs also are spending millions and millions on SEO. Yep. So if you go and look up a topic and you want to find the facts about a topic, you may be on Google page 10 before you actually find something that isn't a regurgitation or a reiteration of the disinformation. So one of the things that I do is I make sure if I'm talking to somebody, I first of all spark that conversation, but then also I want to make sure I'm providing them with resources, places to go. And one of the things that I've always said is you need to go ask a farmer. Well, people who are not in agriculture don't know where to go to find a farmer or a rancher to ask the questions, right? So my answer there is we have producer organizations. A lot of those producer organizations are pushing out good information. If you take a look at different websites, you'll find that information. So then I encourage people, go look there, right? They're the ones that are producing the food. They have the factual information. And then compare it to what you're seeing. And then ask yourself, do these people, the producers, are they wanting to stay in business? Because the way that the environmental groups are presenting things, the way that agriculture antagonists are presenting the information would make it seem like there's no way they could stay in business, right? I kind of ask them to ask questions kind of like that, you know, to sort of get that spark going. So there's definitely lots of different ways that we can support each other and, you know, help get the word out like you were talking about, Audrey.
I would agree. I think it's so important just everywhere you go to be an advocate. Kind of a funny story. A couple of weeks ago, I flew to San Francisco. And every time I fly, I always bring a cowboy hat because I think that my best advocacy work happens in airports. And I got asked twice if I listened to Beyonce. And I was like, I have actually not listened to the famous, you know, Texas Hold'em song or whatever it's called. Yep. I probably should listen to it just because I keep getting asked about it. But I was so excited to be asked about my cowboy hat because I was able to say, no, I don't listen to Beyonce. I've been wearing a cowboy hat my whole life. Let me tell you about cowboy culture. Let me tell you about agriculture. Let me tell you about what we actually do. Because these folks in San Francisco, they would have no reason to know. And one of the things that I think that agriculturalists kind of do to a fault is when these consumers who come from these very concentrated cities say something that we would find to be common sense. Oh, I didn't know that hamburger came from a cow, right? That's a really extreme example. But a lot of times we meet that kind of information with such hostility. And I think that rather than attacking that, because as soon as you come back at them with hostility, they're not going to listen to anything you have to say. They're going to be like, yeah, I met this rancher girl one time and she was a jerk. They're not going to want to listen to anything you have to say. But I think that consumers need to take all of those kinds of opportunities, all of the opportunities of, oh, you must listen to Beyonce because you're wearing a cowboy hat. No, I wear a cowboy hat because I'm a cowboy. We need to take those opportunities to be able to educate people, because those are the people that we need to reach, is the people who really don't know anything about what we do or where their food comes from.
I love all that, because you know that's what we stand for here at Women Connects. Even though I was making faces when you said the Beyonce song, but our approach does have to be graceful. And I love that people are still curious. And I've seen a huge shift, honestly, just within the last 3 years, that there are a lot of people who are curious and we should take advantage of that and do it the right way.
And you know what? Another good important point is that in our American culture, the there had been a whole approach of, we're not going to honor this with a response or honor that with a response. Well, nowadays, silence is acceptance, right? So if we don't provide the facts and we don't provide an answer back and stand up, then the assumption is that the people who are telling the wrong story are correct. We need to keep that in, we need to keep that in mind as well. And that's been a pretty big and important shift. And it's been tough, especially like 10 years ago. It was a lot harder to motivate people to answer back and to speak up and things like that. And in the meantime, other people, other organizations with a completely different ideology and agenda have told the story. And I think we're now much more able to move the needle to help energize people to speak up because they're understanding that. And the old rule or social mores of polite society, like, well, I'm not even going to respond with, you know, dignify their story or their accusation or what their representation. I'm going to answer back. We've got to understand how our culture has shifted and people do look at a non-answer. There's a void there, right? And it gets filled with the wrong information and then it becomes a fact and repeated. They're using disinformation from one article to provide a backup for their further statement of disinformation. I see that a lot in looking at things. There's still a little bit of that old school viewpoint, and I think that's hurt us, right? And I think that we need to really help too, as far as helping ourselves. We need to help those people understand that the needle has moved and we've got to move the needle along with it.
I will say just, and this is a sales thing, right? But the numbers do not lie. And I really believe that, okay, the people that are stuck in their mindset from 10, 20 years ago, they're stuck in their own perception. They're not willing to look at the market around them from the sale barns, the current USDA metrics. They're not willing to harness or join the Cattle Raisers Association or the Cattlemen's Association and put in their numbers so that then we actually have accurate statistics to now actually use against the misinformation that's out there. And so I really feel like there needs to be more power to joining and putting in, answering surveys. It is so boring, but I do it for the American Horse Council and for some other equine association I'm a part of because they have to have numbers, and the more people that answer surveys, the better. So I really think that it goes back to, hey, numbers don't lie. So let's give them good numbers.
That's a great point. And Karen, yeah. I get so frustrated. I feel like I'm kind of caught in between that because like when you're dealing with egregious groups, like some of those people are just so out there, like you don't want to give your time and energy to that. Like you've got to set boundaries, but at the same time, I've got two people, you know, the devil right here and the angel right here. And then at the same time, I'm like, no, like, this is not right. Like, you want to go out and you speak out against that. And I'll just say, I'm going to applaud like the younger generation. I think about Sarah. You guys are really, really good at that. You're willing to take those hits and it doesn't go unnoticed. I'll say as a 40-year-old woman, like I battle with that.
So having worked for Protect the Harvest, we addressed a lot of hot button stuff that had some really radical folks and really, we kicked the hornet's nest, right? We would take a look at considering the source. Is this somebody we need to block and ignore? Who are they related to? Or is this an educational opportunity? And is it an educational opportunity for a larger audience? So yes, they might be being super ridiculous or outrageous or whatever. And then you have to think about this, you know, consider the source, right? Is the source the Humane Society of the United States or the ASPCA that has this massive audience? Then, you know, they need a response, right? If they're pushing out disinformation or misinformation, or if it's a research group, I'm not going to name some names right now, but these well-funded research groups that are pushing out disinformation, basically, about our our food, you know, the food that we eat and nutrition and things like that. I think those, you know, definitely warrant a response. And I've been disappointed in the lack of response with some of those, you know, some of these fringe individuals who are, you know, just maybe, you know, don't have a big following or whatever. So I do think that you just got to kind of evaluate the situation, figure out, hey, can I use this person's behavior to our advantage? Because a lot of times you can, you know, absolutely you can. Is this an organization that is, you know, pushing out information and then it's going out into their, you know, it's going out to The Guardian, it's going out to Mother Jones, it's going out to Vox, you know, some of these bigger outlets that are then BuzzFeed, you know, that are then duplicating and pushing this information out. Well, then, you know, as far as I'm concerned, those are sources that, you know, there needs to be an answer back, right? So it's a matter of, you know, balancing and figuring out how you can utilize what they're pushing out. I mean, I used to love to, you know, wouldn't link to what they were doing, but I certainly would, you know, tag the organization so that people could see that there's a response to an article. So those followers could see that. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could be creative in pushing the information out and using your time wisely so you don't get, you know, just zapped and buried, because that's one of their tactics.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
To, you know, they you can see too, like if you're on a social platform, they'll have like tagged a whole group of their people, right? And then they tag more people and then all of a sudden you're inundated. You've got something like that going on. Get rid of those folks, right? But maybe pick one or two that you answer back, you know? So that would be a way to make sure that, you know, we don't have the problem of silence being acceptance.
I think there's also a lot of value in, you know, I made a video about there's no such thing as a vegan. And then I went and I listed a whole bunch of products that everybody uses every single day that come from beef byproducts. And there was this huge YouTuber who has like hundreds of thousands of subscribers or whatever, who made a video reacting to my video. And it was so ridiculous. He like took chunks of it and broke it in and had this, you know, it was like really dramatic reactions. And he called me the TikTok beef lady. Says that I don't exist. And I watched probably the first like 30 seconds of the video that he did and then thought, no, this is going to like raise my blood pressure and make me angry. So it's not really worth me, you know, watching the whole thing. But I did then respond back and I made a response video and was like, I am so thrilled. I know that when he called me the TikTok beef lady, that was meant to be an insult, but I have never been so honored to have been given a title in my whole life. And I think that being able to respond sometimes in those kinds of ways where you're saying, this is so ridiculous that, you know, it doesn't really justify a response. So I'm going to kind of make a joke out of it, at least showed my audience that, you know, I think probably several of them went and watched the video and then said, yeah, you know, that is really ridiculous. We're glad that you're the TikTok beef lady. I think that there's a way to have those kinds of responses too, where you're not putting a lot of time and energy. You're not letting it, you know, work yourself up. Cause I get, you know, when it related to some of these issues that I talk about, I get really worked up and I'm going to have an ulcer by the time I'm 30 if I don't like find some ways to not get quite so fired up about things. And so that's one of the things that I do too. Sometimes you just got to respond to it with humor. And, you know, the chances of me changing somebody who is totally radical, like this, you know, vegan YouTuber, chances of me changing their mind, probably around zero. Chances of him changing my mind and making me a vegan, somewhere less than zero. And so I think that it's also really important to look at who it is you're talking to and whose mind are you actually going to change. And I tell people that really our target audience is people like maybe just barely on the side of the animal activists. Like someone who's sort of in the middle, maybe a little bit far away from us, who has an open mind enough that they can be changed. Wasting your time arguing with someone who is not going to change their mind. They will never change their mind. That's, you know, I look at it as my time is too valuable to try to approach those people, rather the audience that I could possibly influence. And that's who I really try to talk to.
So Tucker Carlson said that in one of his interviews that I was listening to a couple of weeks ago. He was like, you know, when you come across that information or those people who are just completely misguided, like, just if you laugh and have some sarcasm and make light of it, there's no way that they have control over you. And then also, there was another quote that he said, you know, when you're out there advocating and doing the things that you believe in, like, never, ever give anybody any type of emotional control over your thoughts and opinions. And that was just so powerful. That has stuck with me for weeks now. And it's true. And all of you ladies have said it. And I think it proves your wisdom is that you have said the word respond. A lot of these people are looking for a reaction. But when we take the time, think about it, and we respond, it's just much better. Well, this was a great conversation. I know that we could talk for hours more, but I just want to say I appreciate your time for hopping on today. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of ACT Talk, Your Story Matters. Make sure to tune in every Tuesday for new episodes and learn more about us and our mission at agwomenconnect.com. Our latest episodes also air on Rural Radio XM 147 at 10 a.m. Eastern Time every Saturday morning. You can find us on all social media platforms, and we can't wait to hear your ACT story.